hear you here. Yes, I can hear you here. That's wonderful. All right. Ray, I'd like to take on from the first part of this interview that David Brock did, and you had this draft.
I've had it marked up.
Good. I was very interested, incidentally, at you were near the end of that. You were talking about Air Products and Leonard Poole.
Right.
And I actually helped, I will send to you, I helped to write the 50-year history of Air Products, which they published in 1990, so I learned a lot about Leonard Poole. And incidentally, Dexter Baker there, who was there, it was Ed Donnelly then, it was Leonard Poole, then Ed Donnelly, then Dexter Baker. He's right around the corner here somewhere. Do you know that?
Right across the 41. I had to come to his house. He's in the old, I call him, but I know where he goes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On the other side of his first room.
I was going to see him while I was down here. So, but I'd like to begin by tracing out a little more the story of Katzen Associates and Katzen International in the period from the 70s onward. You say that Air Products was a very big early customer.
I started by own company and my consulting activities October 1953. I was off since signing my ex-employer was my first client, and shortly after that I was contacted by a friend of mine who worked for Air Products. They told me they were looking for a top engineer for his company. I said, well, interesting, but I'd rather get a consultant. I'd like to meet with people. And that was arranged. So it was in late 53, about November, I visited Air Products. At that time, their office was an airplane hangar in a small airport in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. And I met Leonard Poole and his brother, George Poole. Frank Pavlos was the finance officer. Ed Donnelly was first in line. I met the whole crew, and my friend was Todd McKinley. He was in research and development. After talking a while, I said, well, they'd like to put me on retainer. So Air Products became my second client in November 53. And that retainer agreement went on for 7 years. And this is a monthly visit, and I'm helping them with problems and troubleshooting, and as I build up an organization, helping them design problems. And it's a very good relationship. You don't work with anybody in the company that needs help. I did mainly work with the engineering group. And the company was very interesting because it seemed to be well structured or organized. I've been there shops, and I know the techniques are pretty antiquated, and this led to the point where after 2 years selling for them, Leonard Poole called me into his office and said, Ray, what's wrong with this company? So Leonard, I need a couple of hours of your time, uninterrupted by anybody. I'm really busy. So let me know when you can agree with this. My next monthly visit, obviously Leonard, he said, oh, I'm driving to New York. It takes 2 hours. Do you want to go with me? I said, yeah, I'm headed that way anyway. So, I'll wait to start a little if you want. I had to call Leonard, and he started driving. I don't feel he drove that way, but it seemed to be erratic. He said, Ray, what's wrong with this company? I said, Leonard, you are. Well, he said, you have a very simple structure. 400 employees, horizontal line, and you over all of them. There are 5 different business centers. There's no identification of what they do or how they make out. And I think it is your name. So he said, well, write me a memo. Well, I wish I could find my company memo. I'm very proud of it. I wrote a memo and that part is past, present, future. I knew that back then during World War II with the openings, the chipboard African plants. I knew where they were at and I could see the potential for them. They only one how to design, 2 how to fabricate in a modern manner. And at the end of the memo, I said, reorganize into business divisions, profit centers. And I think we all put together a committee and have 6 months of planning. And I sent them a memo. Next month, I visited, I was out in the hallway when Frank Powers got out of his office. And Ray, come in my office and close the door. He said, Ray, have you read a memo to Emmett Wonderpool? I said, yes. He said, about reorganizing the company? He said, yes. I said, yes. He's been involved. All hell is broken loose. He's doing it right now. I said, that wasn't where I was to do it. But anyway, it took 2 years to overcome that. But this is Leonard. Once he got his attention, he moved. But it took 2 years to overcome that. But I'm very proud of the fact that Leonard, that Air Products today is the top organization I outlined for him. Of course, from beyond that. My concerns then continued. I helped organize the engineering design, engineers and sales that were very poor, communicated. The sales people really ran the show. There was one instance where they sold a contract to the U.S. military, the Army, special trucks to deliver liquid oxygen. About 200 degrees below zero, Fahrenheit, gasified and delivered as a warm gas, close to 2,000 pounds pressure. And they take the contract, then you didn't know much about it, and they couldn't solve the problem. So I was asked to entire my group to take it on. I said, yes, the whole condition. We've always been complaining about my charge rates, which is working on time, the strength basis, the hourly rates, my different skills. I was complaining about it, so I'll tell you, we'll take it on. When we're through, you'll know from our invoices, our number of hours, and dollars, and you show me what you had budgeted. But okay, so one of the best is that we had a method of brainstorming on our group that we all heard like a kind of chemical engineer. And this place seemed to want a bunch of that, and we'll buy it. I think I started, and I just picked it up, a special way of designing triple Peter's name, he's had a pipe and pipe. And he's a hot exhaust gas in the truck. The heat, and he was good for turning the heat and the oxygen was literally a 2,000 pound pressure of the gas. So they built a prototype and worked right off. It solved that problem. Then we went to work to prepare the numbers. We spent half the dollars I had budgeted and 1/4 of the man hour. I think that's what it made then. You get what you pay for. Anyway, that's the other interesting story. After 7 years, they were pretty well organized and expanding, so they discontinued the annual contract and just went on a spot basis as they needed me, which were several major assignments. And one was when they got contracts to recover helium from government reserves, which was restored as a bunch of pure gas. This is all for cryogenics. for this boat, and they took up the design that's been built and been operating, but they weren't getting the security. They told me to take a look at it, and sort of designed the tankers all right, then I sort of hit them. They're operating the boat for the pipe. Liquid tensor is all the same as the gas tensor. And the problem is kind of separating. So I went back to the physics textbook. I had a very good physics one called Osmond Slack, the same textbook. Osmond is good, you know, in the program, but he was good, Slack was good. And in the textbook, I found something called Stokes' Law. And I had a rag for a bit, you know, against the liquor, against gas. Well, the problems I worked out was a method of baffling with power outside the separation. I solved the problem. So that was about the last thing I was very proud of, the fact that my contribution to the product really came around to end up very. At one time, going full function, like in the stock options, and then I was out. Then by now, I approached him, Bertram Riolo, who had been to make a donation to Holly. You know, I saw him from his hotel in New York. I saw him in an apartment, Center Park Avenue. And he said it was interesting, and he said he gave a lot of money to medical organizations. And he said he was so glad he died, so Holly made about $1 million out of it.
He did leave his money to medical.
Well, that was his major interest.
Yeah. Yeah. What the couple of things there. The Air Products itself was having the sales be very dominant. Does that often happen in engineering companies, or is that unusual?
Well, it's all like with an engineering company. An engineering company knows engineers that dominate, but it's in companies selling products, like they're selling gases as a business. They weren't selling engineering research. The marketing of it was very competitive, but they were small businesses. He has Air Liquide and Airco, British DOC. So they were tough competition for the salespeople and family. And the other thing is that I thought that Lanford was a genius in finance. He probably wrote a story. In those days, he didn't have much money, but he wrote a Ford Motor Company and said, "You need a small auction plan. I can put a fence. We'll put it up. He gives us a 10-year take-or-pay contract. That's price." So he wrote a bank plan to get financing. But he knew by the time, before I finished the auction, he was a bigger one. So he took the thing up that way until he went public and went into the national financing. Didn't lock the financing and sales. But the salespeople, it's a sales selling business, that's the key. These gases made out of all kinds of this thing, oxygen, nitrogen, high purity, or what we say, high purity levels. Now they're special gas for products and their products. The big bulk business is very competitive. So sales dominated, and they had very poor communication between the sales and engineers. The sales would say, "What we're going to do is we'll promise the world." And I found some of the engineers had difficulty
delivering. If you think, Ray, in contrast to somebody like Leonard, if you think about your own unique set of strengths, how would you characterize what it is that you were uniquely offering?
Well, I was usually offering a very analytical mind and approach. It was a very broad scientific and engineering base. I was very fortunate, I would say, engineering and college, that some of our units worked there wasn't fully developed. So we studied mechanical, electrical, civil. We took care of all of those. In fact, I took mechanical engineering from the Atlantic, before I took chemical engineering from the Atlantic and graduate school. And, also, I was interested in physics. I took All the physics courses I had, I left the last bit, the only course I hadn't taken was college physics. I was recording that story. And I had a wonderful physics department, Cosmo and Slack, whatever professors. And so I went to take a college physics, but the only course I hadn't taken, but I saw my list and I signed up for my senior course, John C. Olson. I'd approve it, and he was on my list. I also had a junior scholar, a special, he had to take a private clinical credit course, and a graduate course for that chemistry also. And Francie looked at the course and said, that's trying to do too much. I said, we can take out. So I was just a comic phase, probably the 10th one there, I was doing a comic phase. I was talking, I know it was coming, but I won't say it's kind of how I look about it. I'm making, okay. I was one of the first two chemical engineering colleagues studying atomic physics, so I was a physicist and chemist. So that was important part of it. So very good background. Also, I was engineering and a very good English department. I'm a instructor. I'm a superior authority. And as I got to play, it was all male school. I remember Coleman from here at that time. So we had a lot of plays and a very good people. They did in speech and writing, how do you, up on that two newspapers, and so it got into the engineering school, excellent thing in speaking and writing. And last, of course, I got to the end, of course, psychologist in the English department. And Professor Denver, just out of college, and he taught us proper use of English language, new words to use, and gave aptitude and intelligence tests. And I finally realized he was practicing for his future profession, which the U.S. Supreme Court did hear that I was getting his counsel. I'm not an engagement, he's still alive. We got to the end of the course, I didn't have an examination report. I was out of new test. And he said, well, you're finally going to be a 5-minute. So, one by one, went to his office. He came back to him, got all the papers in front of me. And got that stuff open, and he went through it, got working, and called himself. And he got the aptitude test. He said, Jackson, do you know what your best aptitude is? I said, what? He said, law. You know, actually, I don't know what I can say, but I have done very well getting these legal protection contracts, expert witness reports. So that's helped me too in having the legal mind and something that can help. And John C. Olson went back to him. He was an interesting character. He had his textbook. He taught by his textbook the statement of the primary reports and things. And he got me rolling, he didn't know he was going to be a friend, and he had a clear-up captain, he had a question, and he didn't answer him, he kept on, he didn't have to work, but he kept on answering, he said, honey, you rehearsed yourself, and he kept it, ah! As soon as I think, like, he was going to stop it, because this is like another lawyer, he stopped it, and, I don't know how to handle it. If you have any car, I get up on the board and start sketching the same car and fill out the answer. Well, at that time, we recognized the book was out of date. They were all bought the way it was. Adjunct and Gates, and then went out of Michigan. What I owned wasn't a book report. And later, the students started giving them answers from that book. And he didn't recognize these guys. And so, where'd you get that from? He told me, because I didn't say it in D.C. His white hair and nose and the red in the face. And one time he had me up on the board. I was a little mixed up with him trying to throw the answer. I said, where'd you get that from? I was up in the spot place and said, a book by a guy named Olson. he laughed. That's good. He's an interesting type of person. I've been calling him. He has a wonderful background in those days. I thought today, the engineers don't really give a scientific a chemical background. I took study of chemistry in my undergraduate. I got my doctorate by the minors in physical and organic chemistry. That's helpful. Because I can deal with research people, because I'm here now with my client. I've been meeting the last 2 days in Venice. I research with my company. And I can do the, I understand the chemistry, I'll do the physical, I can point out things that creatures understand of chemical reactions going on. So that's a little helpful.
It sounds in what you're saying, Ray, that one of the skills that you learned from your what you've done is communication.
Well, the one thing I learned from Orton, the thing is that I'm going to listen. I learn more by listening than by speaking. That's the most, I just keep that to my intelligence and personality. Then you might keep time listening and speak only when it's central. So that's the one, you have to communicate, that's all my forces. I write properly, in the dotted outline of the case of Walton, so the Navy is the type of in charge of it, has a few months, monthly reports. He called into his office, that's the Walton to the fire department. And the people who work, I think, said, by the way, you write very strong reports, but the best I've seen in the group was quite a thing.
Within your group, within were you, broken for the word, were you the rainmaker of the group, or what?
Well, let's put it this way. As I mentioned, the fire and the high fire and high started to come to the working for other companies for 17 years. I felt that one engineer didn't operate in the best manner in large organizations. So when he likes the person, and well, he didn't like the person. And I always pick up as the AI continued to run. If you like the person, I like the person. So when I saw my company set that way, there was a remote, a view they had of it, one of the same night, one of the famous offices that night, a nice proper office, and down and stuff, that's my office, a little larger than theirs, but everybody had the same treatment, and took the game responsibility, and told them to back it, make them safe, make them safe for eating and drinking. That was the kind of leadership that I provided. I wasn't a driver type, but a challenge type. And I claimed that my method of operation was to respond to people quickly, gave a chance to develop. People won within a year, even though as a person would know whether they were really the 15 prisoners. They didn't go stay a long time. There were more 40 year plus veterans. A lot of myself, they enjoyed the room, they got a couple of families died. Last year, and all the time I had to fight my dreams to the house a while, and had some health problems. And then we got the 20-year veterans, and then it's like, those who stay still around but those that can't take it, the things can't take that kind of self-imposed pressure. There's no line of command for me that they jump down, unless you get a deal in charge of the project, and each person has his own responsibility. And so I always said, I don't know if somebody knows anything like that. They tell me when they have a certain time in their eyes, they have some type of thing, fishing around, the rest and practice. And people like that kind of leadership. They're not given, but they're challenged.
How would you connect what you've learned back into chemical engineering education? You could just
devise
the course.
How
do that?
That's a good story. Some of them actually by practice, underneath the course. There's two things in the meeting. Most engineers, their job is an employee. That's what teaching me about entrepreneurship. job, but an operation or an engagement, like your research, engineering, or production, that's a good experience. Not that challenge early. There are some people that love working in big companies, like the parking damage. I went to plan about 60 or 70 years ago. Contracting firm. And we retired with mostly $40 million in stock. So it's hard to get somebody out of parking camera in a race. Basically, so I think there's several people out of parking camera before they were there. But by the town. But it's hard to have to afford it. It's almost a matter of fact. It's interesting when after 12 years in business, I was using a carbide machine in Baltimore, using cold water equipment for them, but they're very secretive. They're only doing very closely with directions coming in from the electric. So I don't have them for 12 years, and they became a client. So they're 25 years. First time that an outside group worked with a sensitive engineering people and even a sensitive business people, and very sensitive project, they sort of challenged to see what we could do. First time it was evaluated for, it was as a catalyst for the price of resin business, and did an analysis. There's 4 weeks to do it. Well, we put out a report on Friday, December 3rd. I've heard nothing for 2 months anyway, since we talked at the meeting. I mean, the reason the statement was found is we couldn't do anything on that fast. We were about to have our people check it. It checks out. How do you do it? Okay, you have people just to get the people out of the region. They're top notch people. But they have to go to the line of command. They have to go in there and see them. They have to go up and down the line. All they're doing is they're putting on a diamond ring in the world. So I can teach the people how to do this, the management, but you know, a big company called it, they didn't have it. So I'll give a prime example on it. The two ways that we did about 60 projects in the town line in 25 years. A really very sticky one. So there's a wonderful work that I know, so it's HP-less, so we assign engineers from the central region, so it's not our work on the project for it. We come from the layout, you know, probably like the transportation and the hydrogen and the electric, okay, go ahead and do it. So we found it's a really big company in the same way. I feel like there's been a lot of pain in having my own people, but engineers are different kind of their products.
Your group, if I understand it, was stayed in a sort of middle-sized range, and if I was to ask you, why did it not, actually very simple question, why did the group not dwindle away from nothing or grow to be 1,000 people?
Because we focused on what we wanted to do, and I spent 9 years in the country. Very unhappy with the type of mainstream business. We expect you to hire and fire people. But that industry, the global population, we do the designs open, and some of the other things to work with, and I do it ridiculous. You have to go to these sites and go from there, so I don't like this kind of data. What I do like, and I do this with a very kind of mainstream place, and all of these things are all country. Is in process design. This is where you really do the basic thinking, you do the observational and technical and the analysis, and you make or break the project in that basic design. So that's what we're specialized. Now, that doesn't require a very big group. And if you have both trained and experienced, and it's not the same as the number of members, but we operate in the school. We teach them how to find out how you operate in the school. Our major learning is that companies have operated this time. also a lot of people who got the computer redesigned. I'm the team. That's how it's called.